Shohei Ohtani is the fastest player to a 40-40 season in MLB history, and he does it from the designated hitter spot. We'll break that down and more on today's First Pitch. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, August 26th. I'm Lindsey Crosby of Athlon Sports. He's Christian Rao, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. And Christian, what a weekend of games. Wasn't entirely chalk. We did see some interesting results this weekend. But before we do any of that, I think we have to get to one of the greatest players it feels like baseball's ever seen in Shohei Ohtani. Goes 40-40 over the weekend. He is the fastest player to get a 40-40 season in MLB history. And obviously, he does it from the DH position, which we've just never seen. Everybody who's done it has been either a shortstop or an outfielder. And so this is historic because we don't see these a ton, although this is a second straight year with a 40-40 season. But a week and a half ago, we talked about could Shohei Ohtani get a 50-50 season. Yeah. And I remember what you said. I think I said, I don't think he does. Was I wrong? Because the way he got 40-40 was a walk-off grand slam. So obviously the baseball gods are enjoying the vibes of Shohei Ohtani, and they're giving him all of those Hollywood moments. Could we see him go 50-50?
Yeah, I said he was going to do it, but I'm a little more optimistic when it comes to things like that. Yeah, I might be right. Yeah, that 40-40, the homer, the grand slam. I mean, how amazing was that? That's something that you're going to remember. If you watch that game, it's something you're going to remember forever, knowing that you get to see that walk-off grand slam by Shohei Ohtani. But honestly, his next home run, 41, I thought was even more impressive, Lindsey, because it was a pitch that was outside of the box. And the way he swung at it, it looked like 99% of other big leaguers, it would have been infield pop-out. He found a way to get that thing over the wall.
Or fouled off to the left side, and
He's incredible. I think Marcell Ozuna said it perfectly. He's a robot, and it's perfect the way that they explained it. But you know what? 50-50, I think it comes into play. I think the stolen bases will be the tougher part of it. I don't think he's going to have any problem getting to 50 home runs on the season. I think we're going to see that without a problem, to be completely honest. He's still got 10 more stolen bases to go, and I can see as the games get a little tighter, because the NL West is still a really tight division, that that might get a little bit slower, as if you will, to get him, you know, more prepared and safer for the postseason. So I think if he does miss it, it'll be because he misses it for stolen bases. But I think he easily hits 50 home runs.
Yeah, which, fun fact, that would be the most homers in a season in Dodgers history. The record right now is 49 from Sean Green in 2001. He is currently tied for 10th for the most homers in a season in Dodgers history with Roy Campanella in 1953. More drama with Shohei over the weekend, though. On Sunday, Richard Lovelady, the Tampa Bay Rays, hits him on the wrist with a pitch. I always hate when this happens. It wasn't just here, but I always hate when a guy gets hit by a pitch and the first thing they do is check to see if the guy swung. If the bat broke the plane of the plate while the guy was getting hit.
Yeah.
I don't believe he did. He called off the trainers. He stayed in the game. He looked like he was genuinely hurt, but he stayed in the game. Mookie Betts hits a homer the next at bat. Lovelady then hits Max Muncy in the same game. We're going to get to more of these injuries from hit by pitch, because there's quite a few of them from over the weekend. We'll get to more of these in the show. But talking about hurt guys real quick, staying in the Dodgers real quick. Yoshinobu Yamamoto is ready for a AAA rehab start. Do you think it is critical that they get him back for the postseason? Or do you think that what they have is enough to make a playoff run if he's not back and or not effective?
I think they're in a better spot than most teams. But, I mean, if you're talking about your your huge offseason acquisition, with the exception of Shohei Ohtani, which, by the way, you might also get him back as a pitcher. I don't know if you're going to get him back in the postseason, but he's throwing off the mound for the first time this week. So if you can get Yamamoto back in the offseason, or excuse me, in the playoffs, even if it's just in a shorter role, maybe you don't stretch him out to be a starter. You don't worry about that again until the offseason. Maybe you just bring him back into a really high leverage relief role. I mean, could you imagine if you had Yamamoto coming out of the pen?
Or even just one time through the order, like, hey, you're going to start three innings and we're going to throw it to another long man or something.
Yeah. Like, imagine if you put him and Kershaw together. I mean, how nice would that be? I mean, that you could do something like that, right? Because, I mean, you don't know Kershaw playoff. We know that that's a whole different thing. He's older. If you put those two together, maybe him and Miller, you know, with the youth, there's a lot of things you could do with the Dodgers. I think it'll be crucial to have him back to be able to push forward, because you don't know what's going on with Glass now either. Seeing him coming back for a Triple A rehab, I think, is huge, knowing that you still have September for him. So I think you take your sweet time in that Triple A rehab. And if he's okay to go, then maybe he gets one start before the playoffs at most. But if not, you just prepare him for the playoffs.
Yeah. And I think that having him back for the postseason is what matters. Like, right now, your postseason rotation is Jack Flaherty, Gavin Stone, and then question marks, right? Is it James Paxton? Is it Walker Buehler? Is Glasnow back? How confident are you in Kershaw, et cetera? So yeah, that makes sense. Sticking with MVP candidates, Aaron Judge hits his 50th home run in New York's 2-1 series win over Colorado. And interesting stat from one of those MLB aggregator things. In the last 2 weeks, Juan Soto has 9 homers. Aaron Judge has 10 homers. And Aaron Judge by himself ties or beats 6 teams in homer production in the last 2 weeks. At this pace, is a 60 homer season for Aaron Judge pretty much a foregone conclusion?
Yeah, he's at 51 now after the weekend, and I think that puts him at pace for 63, which would be better than his season he had just a few years ago. That 2 week stat is amazing. That Aaron Judge has 10 home runs and 6 other teams have 10 or less. Yeah. But then you put Juan Soto in the mix, he has 9. So between just the two of them, they have 19 home runs. You know, we talked about that at the beginning of the year. And then when we were talking about the division race between the Yankees and the Orioles a few weeks ago, Lindsay, we talked about, like, is this entire lineup, is it enough, or is it just Aaron Judge and just Juan Soto? Well, I don't think it matters. I think we're getting to the point to where if it's just Aaron Judge and just Juan Soto producing, it's going to be okay. They're going to do just fine. They went back-to-back for the 6th time this season. That ties a franchise record for the Yankees. And then they also went back-to-back-to-back. Giancarlo Stanton got in the mix on the game on Sunday. So if you get Stanton going, yeah, I mean, so count me in on this Yankee squad if you have Juan Soto and Aaron Judge doing what they're doing right now. I think that this team might be almost impossible to beat if you get just somewhat pitching.
Just for fun, I went and pulled MLB stats for teams for the last 2 weeks. The combination of Juan Soto and Aaron Judge would be 8th in baseball in homers.
Incredible.
That's 15 days. Because they have 19 on their own. The Twins, who are 7th in baseball with 20 over the last 15 days. The Red Sox are 8th with 18. So just these two men would be 8th in baseball in homers in the last 15 days. And it's absolutely absurd. Yeah.
That's a nice knock. I'm sure Yankee fans will like that. Aaron Judge and Juan Soto alone have more home runs than the Red Sox in the last 2 weeks. You got to love that.
That is hilarious. Okay. From positive and happy things to some sad things. Injuries across MLB. We mentioned Shohei getting hit. He stayed in the game. We saw a couple significant injuries over the weekend. The Atlanta Braves, for the second consecutive Sunday, in the first inning, a young pitcher hit one of their everyday starters with a pitch in the hand. It was Austin Riley last week, ended up with a fracture, out 6 to 8 weeks. This week, it was Michael Harris II, took a fastball off the hand, not as hard as when the Angels did it, but the Nationals, DJ Hers, hits him with 93 and change in the hand. He stays in, runs the bases, ends up leaving the game after the 4th inning. So he was in there for a little bit. He comes out. They say left hand soreness. Testing, x-rays after the game. They did not see a break. He is officially day to day. Feels like they may have caught a break there. Pun wasn't intended, but let's go with it. And then, insult to injury, Marcell Ozuna fouls a ball off of his shin right above the shin guard, and he stays in the game, is limping very heavily, strikes out on a really non-competitive swing on a slider, and limps very heavily back to the bullpen or back to the dugout. After the game, he's in the clubhouse with a wrap and ice on his shin, says he should play tomorrow. It's not a Kyle Tucker situation. He shouldn't be out for 3 months.
Oh, God.
If either of those guys were out, we would finally have to put a fork in the Braves season, I imagine.
I don't know.
It's just, this feels like the unluckiest team when it comes to injuries in baseball history. Like, I can't think of many other teams that have been hit harder with injuries than the Atlanta Braves, mostly position players. They've had a lot of like relievers and depth starters on the IL, but they did have Max Fried and Ronald Lopez on the IL too this year. To go along with this same thing, the Cardinals lose Wilson Contreras to, I believe it was a hit by pitch in the forearm or in the arm?
Middle finger. He fractured
his finger. Is this, how do you fix this? How do you fix this epidemic of young pitchers with questionable control trying to pitch inside and hitting guys in the hand and wrist area? Because a lot of these significant injuries, not Ozuna, but a lot of these other injuries, the Riley, the Harris, Contreras here, these are all from pitchers coming up and in way too much.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how you fix this, if it is there is even a possibility without nerfing the game, right? So I honestly don't know if there's a fix unless you... No, honestly, I don't know. Unless you require batters to step back a little bit, but then that changes the strike. No, I honestly don't know if there's a way that you can fix this. I think that's just, this is just part of the game that happens, and it might happen more often because front offices are pushing more towards high velocity guys, which sometimes means that you get less control.
Yeah.
Michael Harris and Ozuna, great news that they're not going to go on the injured list. We're still a little up in the air if Michael Harris is going to hit the injured list, as you mentioned, day to day, but they did pull Eli White from AAA to say, you know, possibly it might happen. But Contreras did go to the injured list, and he fractured his middle finger. He just came back from an injury. He fractured his left hand from getting a bat swung at him from
the forearm or something. Yeah, he was catching, and he was too close to the plate and caught a swing in the arm, which sounds awful.
JD Martinez, right?
There you go.
So it is an epidemic. Mm-hmm. Completely, definitely, 100%. But I just don't know if there is actually anything that you can do about it. That just might be one of the things that you have to deal with the game. It just comes along with it. Do you think there's anything that can be fixed? I don't.
I don't think there's any sort of like rule change you could implement here. I've seen people suggest you make the pitcher miss the amount of time as the batter. That's going too far.
Yeah.
No. The one thing that I have seen different. So the day before Austin Riley got hit, Travis d'Arnaud, the backup catcher for the Braves, took a pitch to the wrist, was not broken, but he did not play for almost a week. He was sore. He was tender, did not play for almost a week. And when he did finally get in, he had some sort of like sleeve that was on the wrist going down towards the hand. And then it had like a sewn in rubber pad on the outside of it, like a textured rubber pad. And I'm assuming the goal of that is to provide some sort of protection right there to the wrist were another pitch to come in right there. I don't want to say the solution is to add more armor to the hitters, because there's an idea, there's belief that giving these giant elbow pads and the shin and the foot and all of these different protective devices you have now have made batters be more willing to crowd the plate, stand up closer in the box, and invite getting hit by pitch more. And I think there's probably a little bit to that. A lot of it, I think, comes back to the pitcher and the control. But like you said, I don't really think there's a way you can legislate this out of the game. It's going to be something you're going to have to see. Like when it comes to catchers, there was a conversation about, you know, certain hitters, Marcell Ozuna is one of them, have a very long backswing. We need to back our catchers up a little bit so they don't catch a bat on the backswing. it feels like you're going to have to start kind of keeping track of some of these pitchers who like to come inside and don't have the control and lead the league and hit by pitch. Maybe you go ahead and try to just be mindful and maybe set up a, you know, a half tick back or something against those guys. I can't really think of any other way to handle this, because like you said, if you legislate this out, you change the dynamic of hitting versus pitching, and hitting's hard enough already.
I see this being a possibility of being a conversation this winter, though, because it seems like many players, and it might not be as much as in the past, but at least there are some high-named, big-named players that are dealing with these injuries this year, which might cause a conversation to occur at the winter meeting. So I don't think this is going to be the last time we hear about this moving forward. I think there, I don't know if anything will change, but don't rule out them being there being a conversation this winter.
Yeah. All right. Something that's been in the conversation now for a couple of weeks, and we confirmed it's going to happen today. Danny Jansen is going to do something that almost no one has ever done. It's happened before, mind you. It's been a long time, but he will play for both teams in the same game. So Danny Jansen, catcher for the Blue Jays, when this game started on June 26th in Fenway Park, they're playing the Red Sox. He is up to bat, second inning, one out, runner on first, 0-1 count because he fouled off a pitch. Rain starts. Rain starts going. And so they suspend the game. It's due to be made up today. But the trade deadline happened, and he got traded from the Blue Jays to the Red Sox. And the catcher the Red Sox were using in that game, Reese McGuire, was sent down to AAA. And so he no longer can bat for the Blue Jays because he's not on their team. The Red Sox need a catcher in this game because theirs is no longer on the roster. And so Danny Jansen will be both the batter and the catcher in the same at-bat, technically. Now, there's obviously a lot of really weird baseball rulebook stuff in this. Because it was only an 0-1 count, the at-bat's going to transfer to whoever comes in place of Jansen. So he's not going to be officially both parts of the at-bat. But this is just, this is the fun little weird things with baseball, right? Like, this is going to be really, really exciting. But Dale Holman in 1986 in the minors did this. He played for both teams in the same game. And not only did he do that, was he 3-for-3 or 4-for-4? So like it was even more impressive than whatever Jansen happens to do today. But this is still just super cool that this is going to happen in the major leagues.
Yeah, I think this is really neat. It's different. It's just one of those things that you want to tune in. So the game's at 2:05 Eastern, the one that they're going to resume. So yeah. I want to see just at least that first at bat where Jansen's behind the plate where he's supposed to be on the plate, you know, batting. So there's going to be a pinch hitter for Jansen, and there's going to be a substitution for the Red Sox catcher with Jansen sitting in a different uniform than where he was officially starting the game. So it's just one of those weird quirks that you get to think about, and it's a good one for baseball trivia, I'm sure, about 10 years down the road.
Yeah. Elias Sports put out some interesting quirks on this. He'll get credit for a game played for the Blue Jays and a game played for the Red Sox, but when in his count of total games played for his career, he'll only get one. So 1 + 1 = 1 in this situation. Just a lot of really weird things. Obviously, he didn't get a hit. He's not going to have a hit for both teams. Dale Holman was able to do that. He was 3-for-3. He was 3-for-3, and it was for both teams. But just super cool. Definitely to watch. And Alex Cora's confirmed he's going to be in the game, but I'm going to point out, Alex Cora has not confirmed that he's going to be the catcher behind the plate for the made up, like when the game restarts. I just want to clarify that. He has not committed to Jansen being behind the plate. He just said Jansen will play in the game. So Alex Cora could be the worst person in the world on Monday if he doesn't do this for us.
Yeah, he better do it just for the sake of baseball.
Absolutely. Okay. Quick pitch. A lot of stuff to get to from the weekend. We had a conversation last week about rookie of the year, right? And we talked about Jackson Merrill versus Paul Skenes. And I want to kind of bring that back up because the Mets and the Padres split a four-game series over the weekend, two games for each team. Saturday's 3-2 Padres victory was powered by Jackson Merrill, who walked off the Mets. So that's in the feed. I think it was Thursday, maybe, but go back. There's a happy hour episode from us talking about the Rookie of the Year races. Still very pertinent. I still think that Jackson Merrill can win Rookie of the Year over Paul Skeens. Like we said, he's the betting favorite. So go check that out. But I do want to, a lot of minor league focused stuff here. Cam Smith of the Chicago Cubs has homered a first round pick last year, 14th overall pick out of Florida State, has homered in six consecutive games for low A Myrtle Beach. 1198 OPS in 14 games. Wow. He's being promoted from single A Myrtle Beach to high A South Bend for Tuesday's game. Miners are off on Monday. For Tuesday's game, he'll be in South Bend. Mm-hmm. Does he hit seven in a row?
Yeah, let's go for it. Yeah, I think he might as well, right? I mean, you're already talking about him hitting six home runs, and I think he has less than 50 at-bats, if I remember correctly. So, might as well. Give me seven. Give me seven home runs, and I think he can do it. He's moving up to South Bend, moving up to the next level. But, you know, Jesse Rogers, the ESPN guy, and he also follows the Cubs, he put out the promotion tweet, and the way he worded it,
he was going to the majors. Yeah,
it sounded like he was going from low A to the majors, and the way that he was hitting, I wasn't that surprised if it would have been the case. But no, he's just going to high A. I'd like to see him hit seven. He had a great college career in Florida State, and he's already taken off on this, and he might make 13 other teams in front of him regret not taking him.
It feels like there's always one or two guys, even despite the later draft date, there's always one or two guys when they get into professional ball after the draft, just go absolutely nuts. And I'm not even counting whoever it is for Los Angeles that gets called up, right? Not even the Angels guy.
Right.
But just like last year, Colt Emerson went absolutely nuclear. It was a prep draftee playing shortstop and third base, made it all the way to Modesto for the Modesto Nuts, and just went nuclear. And it feels like, one, Christian Moore is legitimately going nuclear for the Angels, but Cam Smith is another guy who is just raking. I mean, 14 games, 319 with, a 1.198 OPS, six homers, 12 RBI, another three extra base hits, including a triple and two doubles. So going nuts.
These Chicago Cubs are going to be, they're going to have some really difficult decisions to make down the road. Great problems to have, but they're going to have a lot of prospects to make some decisions on who goes where opening days. You're going to probably see some big trades coming from Jed Hoyer soon.
Like, here's the thing. You've got Dansby Swanson on a long-term deal. You got Nico Horner at second base. You just traded for Isak Paredes, who has multiple years of team control, at third. Michael Bush at first base. Even if Cody Bellinger leaves. But you have Matt Shaw coming up. You have Cam Smith eventually. Somebody's going to have to either move to the outfield or take over a role from somebody who's currently on the major league roster, and it's just hard to imagine how those are going to happen. So, interesting. We'll see what happens. Hasn't been the year the Cubs have wanted, but there is talent in the pipeline, and Pico Armstrong starting to look like one of the top players and top prospects in baseball recently. Talking about guys, top prospects in baseball, Dylan Cruz, the number two overall pick last season, is set to be promoted for today's series opener with Washington. I believe it's against the Yankees. 100 games between AA and AAA this year, about a 270 with a 792 OPS. He's hit 13 homers. Is promoting Dylan Cruz, a guy who top 10 prospect by everybody, Baseball America has him number six, MLB Pipeline had him number seven. This is all preseason, made the features game this year. Is this a little bit early because he wasn't really dominating at AA or AAA? Or is this just we want to give him an idea of how the majors will attack him so he can make a legitimate run at the opening day roster next year?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think it might be considered early, but what they've seen from James Wood over the past couple months, I mean, he's been so impressive since his call-up. You have to think that their snapshot of what they want to see in the outfield for the Nationals for 2025 and beyond, have both Woods and Cruz holding it down. So yeah, getting him some time in the outfield, see how pitchers react to him, see how he makes adjustments. I mean, he has what, 30, 35 games he can get an opportunity in. So I think it's a great idea to call him up right now. This can give him a nice sample size going into the offseason and make the needed adjustments. And then heading into opening day in 2025, not only do you have to, you have both those guys going to be taking a full spring training, knowing that they most likely will be on the club. Obviously, James Wood is, he's looking like a dang superstar, but Cruz, we'll see what happens from him. But getting those adjustments, I think, will be crucial. And I think I've mentioned this a couple times in the show already, Lindsay, but I really like what Rizzo's doing with these Nationals. I think we're going to find these guys a lot closer in contention with that National League East a lot sooner than most people think.
Yeah, it's I don't hate it. I still have questions about the pitching, right? We've seen so many of these guys, whether it's Cade Cavalli, Jackson Rutledge, just not necessarily working out yet. Injuries have been played a part of that. But the position player group is fun. I'm salivating about the outfield of Wood, Cruz, and CJ Abrams. I think that outfield is going to be great. I see Abrams doing something kind of like Tatis did, moving from shortstop to the outfield. He made three errors this week, and CJ Abrams did, against the Atlanta Braves, including one of them gave the Braves a walk-off on Saturday. Here's a fun thing. He's from Alpharetta, Georgia, right? So he's a local kid to Atlanta. He's made 49 errors in his Washington Nationals career.
Ooh.
20.4% of them have been against the Atlanta Braves. It's just one of those things. It's like you're an Atlanta boy. You're always an Atlanta boy. And for some reason, when he has to face Atlanta, he gets a little yipped up. And he's, I mean, 20% of his career Nationals errors have been against one team. And granted, division rival, you play him a lot, but that's still an outsized percentage. And it just feels like he's going to make a great right fielder one day.
Has he ever gone on record to say that Braves were his team growing up? I assume that's the case.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, they interviewed him before the game. It was a Roku game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about he had like 30 or 40 family members there, family members and friends from like when he was a kid, obviously extended family in the area, coaches and all of that. So, like, yeah, I imagine he gets a little yipped up when he plays Atlanta. Maybe he should play for Atlanta. Maybe that would fix it. I don't know. The way the injuries have gone for Atlanta, they may need him.
Well, Caleb, he's got to get DFA'd before he can do that. He's got to come to Atlanta as one of those Island of Misfit toys. So I think that's not going to happen.
A third of the Braves roster right now are guys that were DFA'd from the previous teams. I wrote that article for Sunday morning on Sunday morning for Braves today. So Rafi Devers, okay, hits his 200th career home run over the weekend. You know, Boston has a series against Arizona. They get swept, right? They lose all three games. Their wild card hopes are probably done. They still have a chance. They're mathematically still in it, but it feels like they're probably done. But is Rafi the best player we don't talk about enough in Major League Baseball?
That's a really good point. I think we're not talking about him enough because the Red Sox are not really in contention, as you mentioned. They're the third best team in the American League East in their own division. I mean, that's a really good point. I think he's up there. I think it's a conversation between third basemen. I think it's between Rafael Devers and Jose Ramirez. I don't think we talk about Jose Ramirez enough either.
We don't.
But 200 home runs, that's really impressive.
At age 27.
Yeah, 27 years old and he's doing that. He's going to be with the Red Sox for quite some time. I think he still has, 9 years left on his contract?
A lot.
So, yeah, he's there. He's there for a hot minute. So
he signed through 2033, when he'll be 36 years old.
Yeah, and 200, what do you think? So in 9 years, do you think he gets to 500? You think we're going to see 500 home runs from Devers?
Provided the health holds out, I think he could potentially be a 500 homer guy. And it's just one of those, look at Judge, and he was in his 30s when he hit that next milestone. It's just, I mean, Rafi's 27. He came up when he was 20. He played almost 60 games in 2017 at the age of 20. And so he's had some short years. He only hit 21 homers in 2018. He hit 27 homers in 22. He has 28 right now, but feels like he has what it takes to potentially do it. So we'll see what happens. Yeah. Wrapping up the show today, this is a baseball podcast. It's not just MLB. Congratulations to Florida on winning the Little League World Series. They went to extras. They walked off Chinese Taipei on a rough defensive play. There was a sack bunt.
Got a
first baseman, pitcher, catcher all went after it. Second baseman didn't rotate over to cover second. Runner scores from second to walk it off. Tough way to lose. So congratulations to the kids for winning the Little League World Series. And can we please stop emailing me betting lines for the Little League World Series? That, yeah, to me is a bridge too far.
I would rather bet on the color of the Gatorade than bet on Little League World Series. So yes, yeah, absolutely agree. Just,
like, one, I don't see how you're informed enough to bet on it. And two, that's just, don't do that to these kids. Come on. I don't want anybody getting mad at these kids for losing a bet on the Little League World Series. If that's the bet you had, go outside, touch some grass.
Yes.
Bet on adults playing the kids game, not the kids playing the kids game.
Please.
Yes. All right. Minute or two over today, but this has been First Pitch for Monday, August 26th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. Really does mean a ton to help folks discover the show. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, leave a comment down below. We're going to have some happy hours coming up later this week, so stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, this has been First Pitch.